and 300 people were treated for heat-related symptoms. American forces killed 11 Iraqi militants near Iraq's border with Syria. A suicide bomber killed 25 Iraqi army recruits northwest of Mosul. A suicide bombing at a Baghdad hospital killed at least 5 people. And a bomb killed 2 Britons in Basra. Iraq's Prime Minister Ibrahim al-Jafari called for the prompt withdrawal of U.S. troops from the country. General George Casey, the top U.S. commander in Iraq, said that the troop withdrawal would begin by spring 2006 if the political process continues to go positively. And we know how well it's going. King Fahd died. Fahd, he's another guy. A massive dust cloud thousands of miles across was heading from the Sahara Desert toward the United States. And the Pentagon was stalling to avoid the release of more photographs and videos from Abu Ghraib prison. The videos are said to show young boys shrieking as they are anally raped. German archaeologists reconstructed a 28,000-year-old stone phallus, nearly 8 inches in length. There was evidence, they said, that the phallus had been used as a tool. President Bush's favorite dirty joke was reported to be, "The only time I ever hit 2 good balls is when I step on a rake." It's kind of funny. The Senate went into recess, and G.W. Bush appointed John Bolton to be the temporary ambassador to the United Nations. The Bush administration has started referring to the war on terror as the global struggle against violent extremism. Karl Rove got a $4,000 raise. In New York City, subway crime dropped 23% in the wake of random bag searches. Ukraine fired all of its traffic policemen. Traffic was not noticeably affected. British police had arrested 19 people believed to be connected to the London bombings. A huge patch of ice was discovered on Mars. And the speed freaks are all rushing to it. And an object possibly larger than Pluto was discovered beyond the orbit of Neptune. Someone should have found this before, said an astronomer. Canada and Denmark were arguing over the claim to Hans Island, an uninhabited one-half square mile of land 682 miles south of the North Pole. And ultra-nationalists in Israel held a Pulsa Denura ceremony to call on the Angels of Destruction to kill Ariel Sharon. An executive at Coca-Cola said that the company would soon start producing a soda that burns calories. Sure. And monsoons in India killed at least 800 people and scattered the carcasses of 17,000 goats around Bombay. Officials in Senegal, concerned about the encroaching desert, were considering a proposal to plant a 3-mile-wide, 4,375-mile-long wall of trees. A Nebraska man was charged with having sex with the 13-year-old girl whom he had wed legally in Kansas. And a homeless man in Nashville, Tennessee, confessed to strangling 2 other homeless men. "I got addicted," he explained, "to sucking the souls out of people." In Pinetown, South Africa, 2 little boys found a fetus without legs or a head. Police said they found no animal saliva on the fetus. Kansas police took away, then returned, the left foot of an amputee named Ezekiel Rubottom, who had been keeping his foot in a bucket on a friend's porch. "It's all good," said Rubottom. Florida was infested with iguanas. What else is new? An Australian eel, nicknamed Eddie, was seen swallowing a goose. And British zoo authorities sent a parrot into seclusion after the bird told two policemen, a mayor, and a vicar to fuck off. Ah, it must be 2005, we can say that. This has been the Weekly News and Review from Kill Radio and Harper's. This is Bennett. Thanks for listening, and aren't you glad somebody told you this? Okay, well, I have an interview with Krista coming up, but I'd like to just start off with the first song she did, and so here we go.
And this song is called Preacher's Son. Smoke cigarettes and drink lots of brew. Spread my legs when I feel like I got nothing to lose. I say what I want when I want to. The day I met you, 'cause you gave me every excuse justify my sin, justify within, justify my sin. Make me forget where I've come from. Got no idea where I'm going. Want to believe you're the one. Halo's hanging heavy these days. It's covering my eyes. I feel so far from heaven, oh, but it's no surprise. Justify my sin, justify within, justify my sin. I can feel it deep within. Virtue is so hard to come by in this day and age. And if I left it up to you, you'd have me in an early grave. Justify, testify to everything I hate. You bring it out, I can't erase. You leave me in complete disgrace. Save me, save me. I'm drowning in your eyes. You got the grip around my neck. Now all I can see is the white of your lies. Justify.
Wow. That was great.
Thank you.
Who wrote that?
I did. That will be on our album.
How far are you along with the album?
Halfway.
Halfway? And so you're off on a tour now, and you're going to be gone for several months, right?
We'll be gone for about 3 to 4 months.
Yeah.
And we're actually going to be opening for the Seeds in a few cities.
Yes. So. Yes.
Yeah. And let's let me fade this here. We have more music, and we have an interview, and I'm going to go to the interview next. You're listening to the Kill Radio Impressionistic News Hour for Thursday, August 4th. And again, when I do an interview like this, it's because I think that it's well, I want to be positive, you know. I want to be a positive person, and I want to give you some positive news. And so I thought that, especially for my send-off for a while, I thought that it would be nice to have a story of somebody who's, I think, very interesting. You don't know her yet, and hopefully you will. Here's my interview with Krista, starting with this. That's Krista De Aaron singing the end of Heal the World with Michael Jackson back when she was 11. It's an amazing, we were all 11 once. So it's Krista De Aaron, but you were Krista Larson.
Yes.
Back then. And this morning I did a...
Don't tell me you Googled me.
I Googled you. And I found this list of things with the name Krista Larson. Mm-hmm. And it's obviously you, because there's Michael Jackson, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And there's Minnie and Me, well, that you did with Disney. And Little Richard, Shake It All Out. Were you in that?
No, I did the Itsy Bitsy Spider with Little Richard.
Is that on that album?
Because
you're credited on there.
That was... I don't know if they ended up putting on that or not. That was for a pediatric AIDS benefit album.
I got you. You're listed down here with the question mark.
With Richie Lawrence.
And Little
yes,
Rich.
That was me on accordion.
Well, it gets better when I go back to here. Here you're listed for playing saxophone on the Dolomites album.
Sexy sax.
Medicine Show is the name of the album, and there is Krista Larson saxophone.
All right.
That's not you, is it?
Could have been. Who knows? Yeah, we all have those days where we wake up and not sure what we did the night before.
Well, then you also did Brendan Lee's and Wow and Flutter's photographs and the RC5. You a photographer, too?
I am a jack of all trades.
Evidently.
Yeah.
And you play electric bass on Jeff Barash's album Bouncing on 160th Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm currently working on a tabla album.
And the oud. Can I play oud for you? Well, I would like to talk about the your story from being a little kid, somehow getting in the Disney circuit well enough so that Michael Jackson would request you to sing with him and appear at the Super Bowl. and that, do you want to talk about that?
Sure.
What
do you want to know?
What color was Michael Jackson's bedroom?
Actually, I went to a studio. Uh-huh. I never got to go to the Neverland Ranch because shortly after I was invited, that whole molesting scandal took place. So
the first one
jacked my chances of playing with the monkeys.
Didn't you heard about it though, right?
Huh?
Did you heard about it at that time, right? About the monkeys and Neverland and all that.
Oh yeah, well, I love monkeys, so I was really excited to go to play with the monkeys. So
now, were you still with the Disney people at the time that you did Dangerous?
Yeah, that's kind of a gray area.
In terms of memory?
that too.
Okay.
Going back to the whole Australia incident, pretty much like after my mom passed away, it was a slow death with Disney.
Well, as you put it to me once, that it's the happiest place in the world, and you had the little taste of tragedy on you or something. And
So how much time do you got, Bennett? It's a really long story, actually.
We got time. We got time.
I had a second album that I did with them that ended up getting shelved.
Really?
Because they just... I was too much to deal with at that point, I guess, for them, so...
Well... But that was a heavy thing to go through as a kid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's a reason Disney's so rich, because they never like to pay anybody.
I've heard that from friends who've worked at Disneyland and stuff, too,
yeah.
So... And in that same time period is when you did the Super Bowl and mm-hmm. Michael Jackson, and then you were doing Evening Shade mm-hmm. for a while. Did you do a lot of auditioning back then? Were you...
Not really. I mean, it was really hard to find somebody to take me to auditions at that point,
because yeah.
my mom did everything. The Evening Shade thing I had gotten prior to that. That was like a recurring role, so I had done that.
Evening Shade was a I think it was CBS. Was that?
I don't know.
Yeah. But was a TV show with Burt Reynolds back in the early '90s.
So much.
And you played his daughter's best friend or something.
Yeah, I was actually supposed to play his daughter, but. I was maturing at too fast of a rate.
You developed
point,
too much.
So.
Yeah.
But he made a role for me so that I could be on it anyways. I actually have above my bed with his fabulous, like, horrible 90s leather jacket, but it's a headshot he gave me, and he signed it. It says, "Krista, I wish you were my daughter."
Oh.
Love, Bert. So, I love Bert.
Ever have a chance to see him?
No, not in a very, very, very long time, but he's so nice to me, and he sent me, like, this huge basket of stuff on my mom's anniversary and stuff, so
uh-huh.
That's sweet.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
But the show didn't last very long anyway, right? It was only, like, one season or something?
One or two, yeah.
Yeah. And then it was gone. And
Michael Jeter and Hal Holbrook and...
I was in a movie with Hal Holbrook.
Some other, yeah. A couple other ladies who, I apologize, I can't remember their names, but they've been around for a while doing movies and whatnot.
Uh-huh. Well, what was that like? I know you weren't being paid very much, and you probably were probably had a lot of work to do when you were that age. But what was that like? Did you enjoy performing?
The most amazing experience I had was I got to do Les Miserables for 2.5 years, the first national tour. And
2.5 years?
Yeah.
Yep. All over the country?
Yeah.
Did you play L.A.?
No, I had quit before we had gotten there. But
uh-huh.
It was the first national tour that they had ever done of that. And we started New York, Boston, Washington, Philadelphia, Chicago, and then they went on to, like, Detroit. And
there'd be long runs in each of these cities, right?
Yeah, it was anywhere from 8 to 10 months. So.
Wow.
But
so you'd hole up in some town that you'd never been before and,
mm-hmm.
and get to know it pretty well. What, you had 7 shows a week, 6 shows a week?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we had... let's see. We had 5 shows and then 2 shows on the weekends. So a matinee and an evening show on Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah.
So my favorite place there was Boston, because my mom had rented this, like, 2-story. I mean, back then rent was a lot cheaper. But we had a 2-story house on a cliff overlooking the ocean in Hull, Massachusetts. So we would commute in to the city, you know, for work or whatnot. But And that was the amazing thing about my mother, too. Like, she was always really... It was important to her that we had, like, a real sense of, like, home since we were being uprooted all the time. Uh-huh. My sister traveled with us a lot. But... So we had this amazing, like, ocean house, and we had, like, a break wall for a backyard and go play in the little tide pools, and it was an amazing experience. So.
And in those days, you didn't work, because you're doing a play, you just worked during the showtime, right?
Yeah.
And just a little bit of prep, so you had a lot of free
time.
And
then we did school.
You went to school there, a regular school?
Tutors.
And
in Boston, actually, I did go to a regular school.
So you're there,
but it wasn't. Yeah, I weren't always able to do that in every city. So,
uh-huh. Yeah, education along with performing. let's get to those middle period before we catch up with you today. So after the Evening Shade experience, and your mother had passed away, and Disney no longer wanted you, and the Super Bowl was in the past, and
mm-hmm.
all that. What happened?
Where
were you?
I was in high school, and I had given up a performing career for sports.
Sports?
My dad was a girls' basketball coach when I was growing up, so that was my way of trying to... seek his approval.
Uh-huh. Were you good?
I was league MVP and point guard. I loved it. I mean, so anything I do, I pretty much sink myself into and try to.
This is true. I met Krista. She did the makeup, and she performed in a film that we worked on last winter. And I remember one night, when we were shooting a single shot of you out in a driveway in a van, and you spent about 2 hours.
Because it was trying to get the lighting right.
Well, they were trying to get this perfect
super
little crack
technical.
Of light in this doorway.
And you can't move.
You couldn't move at all. But what amazed me was when it was on, it was kind of startling to watch. It was like, I guess you were playing a space alien, but it was a space alien moment. It was really eerie. Couldn't believe how it looked on the monitor. I couldn't believe it. By the way, I got the DVD of Average Man yesterday, and I'm taking
you
a look.
You did? I've been asking for a clip for like 2 months.
Well, I don't think they're ready to give out clips yet. I don't think so.
Well, they said they would, but it's like, I want to do more editing. Just because I had to send.
You needed a clip.
Sorry, this is unimportant. But
no, this is what it's all about.
I was up for.
And you can say whatever you want. Fuck yes.
I was up for a role for Kadavra, which I don't know if you've ever seen that comic book. But it's basically, it's like a female version of Frankenstein. And, she goes around, like, stealing body parts from, like, dead celebrities. So there's, like, a scene when she's in, like, Marilyn Monroe's bedroom and stuff. And, yeah.
So you were working on that?
No, but I was, the guy was interested in using me, so he wanted to see a clip of Average Man from Lucille.
I see.
So they're like, yeah, we'll get it to you. I'm still waiting.
Well, I note that you went from Krista Larson to Krista De Aaron. When did you change your name?
Did you do it 2 years ago?
Legally?
It's still in the process.
Yeah.
It's really expensive to change your name.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I actually have the papers, but I have to wait till I get back to Europe to send them in, because it's like another $300 or something.
Arg.
Yeah.
Cost money to change your name.
Yeah.
So you get paychecks as Krista Larson?
No, I get them as De'Aaron.
That's good.
Yeah.
So you get a bank account, at least in that. You got a Social Security in that name?
No, not yet.
Not yet.
Yeah, all that. That's what costs the money, is to change all of that stuff.
Boy.
So basically, you can have a pseudonym, like work permit type situation, whatever,
right.
But legally, I'm still Krista Larson, but for me, Krista Larson died a long time ago.
That's why you're Krista De'Aaron now. Uh-huh. Well, I know that you finished high school.
Not, well, yeah.
You finished going to high school.
I dropped out my senior year and worked full time and got I did the home study or whatever to get my.
Oh, you got your GED?
No, I got a diploma. I went to a private school, so I was able to do stuff like that.
What city was that?
Fullerton. Good old OC.
And
just work full time. Because I was working, like, I was working, trying to work full time when I was still in high school, which wasn't working. It's a big waste of time for me. And then I went to college for a year, which was a
which
big
college?
Waste of time for me. No, actually it wasn't. I'm very thankful for all of my experiences in my life.
Are you bookish? I mean, I would assume you're a reader.
I was very much into culture and anthropology in college, which kind of got me in a lot of trouble, actually.
Oh, yeah?
Again, I went to a private college, because, like I said, I was working full-time when I had gotten out of high school, and due to all the drama going on in my life at that time, I kind of messed it up for myself to get into college, but I really wanted to go. And my sister was going to a private college down in San Diego, and they at the, like, literally 3 days before school was supposed to start, offered me a scholarship and a grant and all this. So I ended up going there because, I mean, any chance to be closer to my sister, I jump on. And me and my sister are very much polar opposites. And I think they offered me all this stuff expecting, you know, oh, it's Sherry's sister, of course. So, my first day on campus was, I think they were ruining the day that they sent me the scholarship. So,
did you declare cultural anthropology when you went in?
Let me back up a minute. It was a private Christian college. So I very much stood out on campus because every girl was like, you know, long blonde hair, Sunday school dress, like Bible under their arm, and, you know, I come walking down the hall wearing like cut off, you know, camouflage shorts and like jet black hair and like Charles Bukowski under my arms. I pretty much stood out like a sore thumb. But, you know, I was very much, like, involved in, you know, different things going on there. And I, you know, kept to myself for the most part. I was kind of very shy, believe it or not. And, you know, I wanted to learn and grow and experience things. And just because of the way I looked, they had a major problem with me. So, and then when I got into culture anthropology, I was, you know, studying about all these, like, tribes and stuff that use body piercing as a form of, a cleansing ritual. And growing up in an environment that was very, like, emotionally stifling, you know, don't speak unless you're spoken to, it was very appealing to me. So, the first thing I did was pierce my nose. It was the first step, and they did not like that. at all. It was great, though, because, like, I'd worked out an agreement with my RA that I wouldn't wear it when I was, you know, in class or at dinner or whatever, but when I was on my own time, I should be able to be myself. And she's perfectly fine with that. Up until second semester, I ended up going camping with some of my friends, and which some of them happened to be males. And one of the males, I didn't know that the co-ed camping was against the rules either. There was nothing about that in the handbook either. So
they make up the rules.
You know, I had my own sleeping bag. You know, I was, you know, just hanging out by the fire with my friends.
Now, by this time, you were over 18 anyway, right?
Yeah. And one of the guys ended up bringing his girlfriend. They got in a huge fight, and that escalated, and went back to campus. He broke up with her. She ended up going to the administration and telling them that we were smoking pot and all this stuff, which we really weren't doing. After they had gotten in a fight, me and my friend Chris left, and we ended up spending the night on Coronado Beach that night. So we get back to campus the next day, and there's this huge crowd conjugated in front of the administration building. And we're like, what is going on, you know? I mean, literally, it was like the entire school, practically, which, you know, wasn't that big, but it was, you know, a few thousand or something. And so everyone sees us pulling in. They come running up to our car, and they're like, where have you guys been? Like, they're looking for you. They got, you know, Matt and AJ and, you know, what else and up there. They're expelling them, and they're looking for you. We're just like, what's going on? So, like, they pulled us in there, and, you know, right away, it's like, you know, where were you guys? Are you engaged in, you know, promiscuous activity? And da-da-da-da. I'm like... It is possible for a guy and a girl, you know, to go camping, you know, just because they're different genders doesn't mean there has to be something going on, you know. And long story short, they end up kicking us out. And
before the end of the semester?
Before the end of the semester, which, you know, there wasn't that long to go at that point. And I basically, you know, my friend Chris was like, screw you guys, I'm out of here. And I really couldn't afford, you know, to waste the money. So I had an appeals meeting, and I went across the hall to my neighbor, who's, like, who they consider their ideal student. And I, like, borrowed some of her clothes and, like, just tried to tone down as much as possible. And I basically went in there. I was like, you know, I'm willing to eat crow here. Just let me finish out my semester, and you don't have to see me again. And this guy, Dr. Nichols, I'll never forget him, gets up in my face and is, like, pointing his finger at me. And he's like, you know, you've been walking the line all semester, and da-da-da, and, you know. Which I'd never been, aside from the piercing thing, like, I really hadn't been in trouble other than I got called into the counselor's office the first semester when I was there because I had taken too many credits that they wouldn't allow a fresh... They only allow freshmen so many.
Right, right.
So I had to drop a class. So I ended up dropping my Bible class. And
they love that.
I was already taking a world religions class. Uh-huh. Like, I was going to chapel 3 times a week. We were required to go to church on Sunday. And all the curriculum... I mean, even my math class curriculum was... from a Christian perspective. So the counselor's like, well, you know, we don't feel like you're taking advantage of, you know, the opportunity that we've given you here. And I'm just like, I'm like, this is my first semester. You know, I have all these other things. You guys were the one that maybe dropped the class, you know, like, why are you on my case? So, I mean, other than that, I really hadn't done anything.
Right.
You know, my grades are pretty good. So, but he gets up in my face, and he's like, and if I see you with that nose ring in, he's like, I'm going to send somebody in your room at 3:00 in the morning to check and see if it's in, and if it is, you're out of here. Like, he just has such a problem with something so inane.
Well, now, let me ask you something, though. I mean, you realized before you went there that it was a Christian school. Were you trying to become a Christian, or were you...
I actually do consider myself a Christian,
uh-huh.
Which I know the sound of that label makes a lot of people cringe, but, you know, I believe
there are plenty of nice Christians.
You
wouldn't know that.
Listening to them. They are few and far between sometimes, but I don't consider myself religious.
Uh-huh.
I consider myself a spiritual person.
Uh-huh.
You know, and my idea of God might not necessarily be your idea of God or, you know, anybody's sitting next to me idea
of God. That's why it's called freedom or religion.
But I still believe that it's, you know, it's still our God.
Right.
You know, and,
well, so you were basically drawn there because of your sister more than...
More that they were willing, you know, giving me a free scholarship and I was able to be next to my sister. So that was, for me, the opportunity. But...
Because obviously there are plenty of schools that wouldn't have hassled you about any of this stuff.
Yeah, and you know what, though? Like, it's, again, like, I think it was kind of God that brought me there because I kind of denounced everything that I had known at that point growing up. You know, I mean, my family, my dad was very much, you know, hardcore Christian Southern Baptist.
Oh, he was.
So I had been enculturated with this whole idea.
So it was the natural thing to do as well.
But it was great that all of that had happened because I basically threw all of that away and then went on this, you know, amazing journey of trying to figure out, like, well, what does God really mean to me? Like, what is all of this, you know, and really just, like, figured it out for myself. And that might not have happened had I not had that experience with that college. So I'm very thankful for it.
It helps make you where you are today.
And, you know, it's I changed the handbook when I left. It's my little claim to fame.
Well, in the interim there were some, I mean, you had some down periods, and obviously you had a lot of drama in your life and sad things, and there were stories about the money that had been put aside for you and all that. You told me once that you were homeless for a while, mm-hmm. In Venice.
Mm-hmm.
But all that's turned around, and you moved to New York. I'm needing to draw to a conclusion,
yeah.
You know. and I know that you design clothing,
mm-hmm.
And you do you play the bass and percussion and take pictures of album covers here. And, you know, you won't, since you won't answer that. I guess it's all true, right? And you do makeup. If you actually Google Krista De Aaron, there are makeup things about you and on some films. Mm. So you've done several of them. How did you end up in Average Man?
I used to live in the same building as Richard Edson.
Oh. So Richard knew you.
Yeah. And he...
Richard's the star. He is the Average
Man. Getting cast and all that, I was talking to Steve one night, and he was like, yeah, you know, there's this girl, you know, I don't know, she might have something, she's kind of strange, she might work.
Well, you did.
So.
And now here you are.
Yeah.
And then you made connections, and now you're working with Skye Saxon. Skye's been sitting in that very chair. In this studio, smoking pot and talking about things. My favorite part of that evening when he was here was when he picked up and sang along with himself on a record. And that startled me because
he can't get the microphone out of that guy's hand.
Well, his voice is still so good. His voice is still great.
Yeah.
You know? It's a fascinating singer. I have all kinds of Skye stuff. I got him ranting about things and on from records and all that. So you're on tour. You're going on tour. You're leaving very shortly.
We have a show. We're leaving the 11th. We're doing the Pacific Northwest.
Which is the day I'm leaving, too.
Yes.
Yeah.
Have fun on that. And then we're playing the Knitting Factory on the 23rd. And then we'll be in London on the 29th. And that'll... start it off.
Start the European tour.
We're doing a festival with the Damned out there. And
so, Dave, if you're over in London listening, you'll be able to see this magnificent artist. And let's see. And the movie Average Man, hopefully, will actually get a distribution deal and a release. It's a good movie. And then you can see.
It's going to be a while still, though, I think.
The score is not finished. There's a lot of. There's temp
mixture.
Tracks on it, which don't sound good to me.
Yeah.
And the mix still needs to be worked on, and I guess they're doing
some. I got
to
do ADR re-edits. When I come back.
Oh, you are?
Yeah. Okay. A lot of work still.
It's part of the world. So the reason I do all this, you see, this is for a news hour. Now, normally we're very political on the news hour, and there's plenty of things to talk about. But. When I have people in, I kind of want to be optimistic, and I think that the story you've been through is something that we all, you know, need to know about, you know. And now you folks at home and on Radio for All and on Upstart Radio and if you're hearing the disc of this, now you know Krista Larson, Krista De Aaron, a lot better. And so thank you guys, thank you Rick. Thank you, Krista.
Thank you, Bennett.
Okay. Boing. So, Is Good will be starting.
There we go. That's the interview. And, yeah, Krista's great. She's beautiful, she's talented, and she's generally fun to talk to all the time. So, here's the other stuff that we recorded this morning for the music. Second song, here we go.
I don't really blast out as loud on this one, Bennett. So, you know.
Okay, I'll keep my eye on it. Okay, back here in the studio with Rick and Krista. Okay. So you want to introduce the song?
This is a song I'm very much in love with that Wanda Jackson did, called I May Never Get to Heaven.
That's fine, take two. Start that again, I'm sorry. Take three.
I walked with you and talked with you.
Again, just wow. What are you calling yourselves?
We don't really know yet. My introduction into this whole process that we're doing together, Rick has a band called the Woolly Bandits that is getting released while we're actually going to be out in Europe.
Uh-huh.
So he's kind of brought me in to the Woolly Bandits.
So you're part. You're a Woolly Bandit now.
I'm a Woolly Bandit now. And eventually that'll evolve into something else that we don't know yet, but whatever it is, it'll be divine intervention, I'm sure.
You know,
just kind of wait for things to present themselves to us. So.
I'd love to hear another song. I mean, these are so good. I could listen all morning.
Do you want to be college days?
You up for it? I know you just prepared two, but...
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Well, this one, this is going to be like... an epic when we're done with it. But yeah, right now it's just kind of like a skeleton. But it's a fun song.
Okay.
It's like our punk opera. Huh?
They're just.
Sorry, guys. Out there in Radio Land.
Give me a moment here. I'm going to stop and start. The archive is going. And let's try this one more time.
Don't you laugh as the hearse goes by, for you may be the next to die. They wrap you up in a big white sheet, from your head down to your feet. They put you in a big black box and cover you with dirt and rocks. For about a week, and then your coffin begins to leak. The worms crawl in, the worms crawl out, the worms play pinochle on your snout. They eat your eyes, they eat your nose, they eat the jelly between your toes. A big green worm with rolling eyes crawls in your stomach and out your eyes. Pours out like whipping cream. You spread it on a slice of bread. That's what you eat when you are dead.
And pus pours out like whipping cream.
Yes.
That was fantastic. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having us.
All right.
Krista Aaron on Kill Radio. She's 26 years old. And I love that voice. Didn't you love that voice? And Rick from the Seeds doing the Woolly Bandits thing. So that's it for this week's Impressionistic News Hour here on The Kill Radio. Here's a note. I'm going to be gone for the next few weeks. Definitely the next 3 weeks. I should be back in Los Angeles by the 1st of September, though I don't know if I'm going to be doing a news hour that particular week. So I won't be around for maybe the next month. But I will be back, and I am going to do a chill room this coming Saturday night. So, hey, please listen to the chill room, my music show. Thanks a lot to Krista and Rick and Mike, who videotaped while we were here. And have a glorious August, you beautiful, wonderful people. Have all the healthy sex that you can, and stay as unstraight as possible. I mean, there's so much, you know, new stuff that I can talk about too, and about repression that's out there. And of course, Bush believes in creationism, but I wanted to devote today to Krista. So thanks for listening. Thanks for listening to Kill Radio in Los Angeles. Don't forget to kill your friend.